You know there are two endings to Mark chapter 16. And it's really interesting the way the different Bibles handle it, because most of them say, here are two endings. Here's one old ending and another old ending. But the NIV, that often has a bit of an axe to grind, actually says, here's one ending and here's another ending, which is not quite as good. And the ending which the NIV likes to think is not quite as good is the ending where, you see, it says the earliest manuscripts or some other ancient references do not have Mark 16:9-20. Whereas the NRSV, which is just as respectable a translation, in fact, arguably more so, more recent, just says here's one ending, here's the other ending, take your choice. Now, why is it that the NIV translators don't like the ending? And well, I can tell you why. It says here, and this is the bit they'd rather not have, I think. He said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Whoever believes and is baptized, this is verse 15 of chapter 16 of Mark, will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will accompany those who believe. In my name they will drive out demons, they will speak in new tongues, they will pick up snakes with their hands, and when they drink deadly poison, it will not hurt them at all. They will place their hands on sick people, and they will get well. After the Lord Jesus had spoken to them, he was taken up into heaven, and he sat at the right hand of God. And this is the verse I want to start from this morning. Then the disciples went out and preached everywhere, and the Lord worked with them and confirmed his word by the signs that accompanied it. You know, we've been doing Square Mile, and Square Mile came in because there was this division, integral mission, because there was this division between words and works. We've said that even so, within the evangelical world, there is a division between words and works on one hand and wonders on the other, and those three things need to come together to present a fuller gospel. I'm sure that when we've got all those things operating, we'll find there's something else. Because we're only percentage people anyway, and God's taking us further than we've been before, which is why looking back and saying this is the way things have been is not a terribly good way of seeing the way things ought to be. But so we've been thinking about Second Mile, and we've thought about that in relation to mercy, and said that it was quite important when Jesus said about the said to those disciples, these things do not come out except by prayer. So wanting to do good things for people is all very well. There was a lady that first of all talked to Donna, and then Donna brought her to me, and I introduced her to Philippa yesterday, and hopefully Philippa and the rest of us will have a chance to introduce her to Jesus, which is what this long line of contacts about. And she was telling us, and you can see she got bad eczema, hadn't she? And she was telling us about the pressure in her life because of trying to access all the grants she needs, because she's got a little daughter who's disabled because of a brain tumour. And you know, you stand there and you think, oh, it would be lovely to help this lady. But then she needs healing at so many levels. At the level of anxiety, physicality, adultery as well. And I just can't stand the thought of the gospel that is only doing nice things to people and saying, you'll be okay when you die. You know, the best thing for you is to die, because then your problem's over. Now, I only think like that about once a week, but it's true. Paul used to think about that as well. Is it better for me to be in the flesh or to be there with the Lord? And he said, the only reason I'm staying around is for your sakes, guys, because I'll be better off there. Interesting view, isn't it? I'm never quite sure about these things about suicide and mercy killing, and because everybody always seems to look at them from a dimension which misses out the fact that heaven is wonderful. But that's not what I'm talking about this morning. So we talked about that, and we talked also about influence and about the fact that just trying to influence processes and influence people is not enough, that we need to see God at work and doing miracles in that sort of area. and of course that miracles are influential. And today we're talking about life discipleship. And whole life discipleship is something that excites me so much that you cannot believe. I cannot wait to get this series of talks over, because we're going to focus on discipleship, on what it means to follow Jesus in the autumn. And we're going to be looking at the idea of the fact that we've used the phrase 24/7 discipleship, we've talked about holistic discipleship, we've talked about whole life discipleship, and you can just talk about life discipleship, because every aspect of our lives and every part of the world is somewhere where Jesus is to be followed. If you remember, who was it, Stalky quoted on that, on the video, the Square Mile video, she quoted Abraham the Kuiper, whose name would not immediately trip off the tongue, but he was a Dutch Prime Minister around about 1911 and founded the Free University of Amsterdam on Christian principles, all of which you needed to know. The most important thing was that he said, there is not one square inch of this earth where Jesus does not claim lordship. Okay? So if it's in your house, he claims lordship there. And if it's down at a bingo, he claims lordship there. And if it's in Parliament, Jesus is Lord over Parliament. And Jesus is Lord over your telly. And Jesus is Lord in every theatre, in every business, everywhere. He claims lordship. And he claims lordship in every area of our lives as well. And that's what we're going to be working through and trying to understand as we go along. And just wanted to say that I was thinking about, I could understand one or two people perhaps saying, well, now, why are we talking about discipleship when we're talking about mission as well? What's there? You know, and it struck me that the first time Jesus says to somebody, follow me, he says, follow me and, what does he say after that? I will make you fishers of people, he would have said if he'd been around today. Because he would, at that time it was an inclusive way of talking. And anyway, that's why I read the TNIV and not the NIV. That was, Jesus was focusing on the fact that a non-negotiable part of following him was drawing other people in. And so that's where we're going this morning. Now, the verse I quoted was, the Lord worked everywhere with them, confirming the word with signs following. Now, I didn't quote that because I've just quoted it out of the Authorised Version, which I would do more naturally. But that's what we're looking at this morning. So everywhere they went, the Lord worked with them. And as they talked about the gospel, they had the word confirmed. If you think about how it happened in ordinary life, how do you see God at work when you're lighting a fire? Okay? Brilliant example, Acts 28, Paul getting the wood together to light the fire, snake on his arm. He shakes it off, throws it in the fire, and it's not touched by the snake that bit him. Pretty impressive, isn't it, to be able to do that? Mind you, he'd just come out of a shipwreck. He thought, well, bloody, you know, what else can happen? But just in ordinary life. You've got the thing with Peter as well. Peter goes fishing, not getting a good return on the investment. What do? They see a miracle. Work not going well for you, money not coming in, then bear this in mind, that our work, our relatives, the gyro check, the child allowance, are not the sources of our supply. God is the source of our money. Those things are channels through which they come, and God can invent other channels as well if push comes to shove. If you don't go to work, then you've blocked up a channel that God wants to use. So don't think in that sort of way. So you've got Peter, you've got Paul there. You remember we talked about the fact that God did extraordinary miracles, taking bits of cloth off the body of Paul and healing people through them. Now, we said that he actually had a job as a tent maker. He was just a journeyman tent maker, and he did that when he needed money. Didn't always do it, didn't do it when he didn't have to. But he did that, and it was in that context too that he saw people healed. You go into the Old Testament, loads and loads and loads of people there, because you pick up Daniel. And Daniel was a member of the civil service. And there he was, and constantly he was raising spiritual issues in that environment. And he needed miracles because he was saying, I will not eat corrupt food. Okay? Now, there have been Christians, not a big issue for many of us, but there have been Christians who have had to take a stand on all sorts of things as far as eating and entertainment are concerned. And if you're somebody who believes you shouldn't drink alcohol, in some jobs that can be a real problem if you've got to entertain guests and you say, no, I am not drinking. You take a stand on something like that. And when they go on to clubs afterwards, if you're entertaining, you say, no, I am not going to do that. That is part of life discipleship. And you can think of dozens of ways. But let's come down to everyday life, all day, everyday life. Those of you who have got children need more than just to keep on doing the ordinary stuff. Because the gifts of the Spirit, the wonders, signs and wonders, are intended for use in your family. Now, I'm going to repeat very quickly one or two things, and I'm going to talk about it from my point of view, and then I'm going to ask Marion to talk about life discipleship from her viewpoint. So, let me just go over these things, and some of these are things that you'll have heard before, but I want to put them together in place. First of all, you guys need to remember that Wendy and I had our kids when we were very young, which is why we can have seven grandchildren and still be pretty young as well. So the only people I know around here who had kids at the same age as you are Amy and Will. We had two when they were that age, and I wondered where my youth had gone to, as you do. We knew that there were times when we needed to see God at work in terms of healing. And we have, over the years, seen times when medication has helped, and we're okay with doctors, but we've also seen times when God has stepped in and prayed. There are times when, as teenagers, we've had to discipline our kids. I'm sorry, I can't go into the detail, but if you knew the couple of details that I could tell you, you'd really go, wow. But I can think of at least two occasions on which I can remember having a problem with one of the boys and saying, God, what is going on here? And by revelation, God told us. And boy, it really scares the stuffing out of a 17-year-old when you can say, that's the issue. Right? That didn't always happen. But the gifts of the Spirit are available for those sorts of things. We've told you about the day God healed our washing machine. Mm-hmm. Genuinely healed. Brilliant. The day God healed the keyboard. Pretty badly on my computer, but I don't need it when I've got Andy Murray around. But if Andy can't deal with it, then he's going to have to lay hands on it and pray for it, because he's got faith in the area of computers. So you've got that whole sort of package of stuff. Probably one of the most useful ones to mention at this particular time. I can remember one occasion when Susanna was 9 or 10. You know how horrible little girls of that age can be to one another. And she was under some really strong pressure at school. There was a girl who wanted to be friends with her, didn't want to be friends with her, and so on. It really made life difficult. And it was through revelation, and if you want to know the story, I'm telling you in detail because it will encourage you, but I haven't got time to do it. God just showed us that there was something really demonic going on in that family. I'm really able to pray over it, and not stop her from meeting that child, but put one of those invisible barriers that comes as a result of prayer between her and the child who was messing with her, between Susanna and the child who was messing with her head, so that that problem disappeared. Okay. Now that isn't to say you have struggles. You don't have struggles when you've got kids. Best answer, if you don't have struggles, don't have the kids. But there are blessings. And I think somebody gave us a thing on our 60th birthday that said, and I really sympathise with this, that, what is it? Grandchildren are the reward for not having murdered your children when they were teenagers. So over to Marion, please.
Nothing out there, and then suddenly he puts a foot out, and as he steps off, a step appears. And I think, oh my God, it's very much like that actually in discipleship. I've been a Christian for 54 years, which sounds incredibly long. When Dave asked me to do this, and I started thinking about it, I thought, oh my goodness, I've been a Christian 54 years. Have I really changed in all that time, apart from growing some stuff? But actually, I first met Jesus when I was 3, and I met him as a friend. It was a really strong encounter as a 3-year-old, and I just wanted Jesus to be my friend. And then later on, when I was about 10, I had gone to a girl covenanter, which is a bit like Scouts, but the Christian version, I'm fun, girl guides, something like that. And there I heard, in a way that registered with my mind, that this one who was my friend actually died for me. You know, there was a change in which Jesus actually then became my saviour, the one who actually interacted with me in a much stronger way. And my conversion was so powerful, I can remember feeling as if a huge weight had been lifted off my shoulder. And it happened in a castle not too far from here at Hatherup, and I walked down the stairs, and I can honestly tell you I did not feel one step. I floated down. Went into the kitchen, had coffee, at which point, I went, you know these high bar stools you can sit at like this on? And one girl next to me thought she'd play a trick, pulled the stool a bit, and I went crashing down on my bottom, and I just got up and smiled, which is for me unusual, because I usually would have sort of shouted. And then I went to bed. And because I had been brave enough that night to make that sort of, that step and actually do something, I woke up the next morning to find the whole dormitory that I'd been part of had thought, gosh, if she needs Jesus, so do we. And they'd all gone on after me and all become Christians. And it was like, why didn't you wake me up? So I could join in the fun. But I've discovered that growing with Jesus has been fun, but it's also been tough at times. And I want to share with you some of the things that I've experienced and then show you some of the things I've struggled with that I've actually got over. And then some of the things I'm still struggling with. But I think I like to think of it as growing. And I think I've never seen a plant in a garden that grows going, I'm really enjoying this. When you think about it, they push up through the ground first and then they're constantly having to adjust, you know, and you move around and the lights change, and so they do this, and you move around again and they go back that way. There's a constant movement, and I think that's what following Jesus is a bit like. But the first thing I've really actually increased in is appreciating Jesus. In work, you wouldn't believe it, but I've only ever had one proper interview in my whole life for a job. God has provided me with jobs, just like that. I've never, apart from when I went to work for Scripture Union, had to have a really, what I call, a thorough interview. So that's quite amazing. Even when I went to Springfields recently, it was a connection through Wendy, and they just took me in. I was employed. Finance. I've seen God provide money to take me through university, to take me through courses I've done. I've never had to struggle. Even at the point when I met Peter for the very first time, I just lost my job. First thing he did was to look at my credit card and go, right, I'll pay that off. Yeah, he was very good.
people, by the way, from Thailand.
One of the crazy things was when I started working for SU in 1984, God brought alongside me a lady from Scotland who was an intercessor. She worked with the Lydia group. And she prayed for me regularly every day. And the day I got married to Peter was her last day in Exeter because they decided to retire and go to Scotland. So all along that time, God provided somebody who, and she'd ring me up at the end of the day and say, how's today gone? What's happened with this? What's happened with that? And she'd be very, you know, we'd meet up for coffee and so on. When I've been doing various sort of jobs that have required me doing things that I've never done before, I've had spiritual oversight from leaders, which has been brilliant. Getting married, God's been in every way, and I'll explain a little bit more about that later. My health. I first came to England at the age of 3. I caught very bad pneumonia. I nearly died, but a doctor spotted in Tobago what was going on. Came back to England. They took me into hospital within a few months of being back, and they operated. I nearly died on the operating table. And then when I came back to England at the age of 18, I was involved in a serious car crash on the edge of Swindon. The police arrived thinking that we'd all be dead, but we weren't. And God has been there looking after me even when I've not realised it. And it was funny because years later, I found every time I left home, when I was working for Scripps Union, I lived in Exeter and I had to travel to Bristol, every time I left home I'd cry. And I never knew why it was until one day God showed me a picture as I was driving along. And it was a picture of an operating theatre. And he said, look, what do you see? And I say, I see men in green gowns. I see an operating table. He said, what else do you see? I see, well, there's somebody wearing white. He said, that was me. I was there all the time. You didn't have to worry. And so he's been very good at showing me where things have bothered me, that he's been there as well. In church life, In getting an understanding of what God wants, he has led me. When Dave asked me if I'd like to be part of the core team of the church last summer, there were other things in the melting pot as well at the same time. And one night God actually gave me a dream which helped to sort issues out for me. He provided somebody like Joe that I could go and talk to and get my head straight about it. So as we follow Jesus, he walks with us and he helps us. And I'm learning to serve, learning to use gifts, learning to speak as God wants me to speak, and to hear him. And what I discovered with God is that he tends to speak to us when we least expect it. You know, I'll be feeling something, and then suddenly Claire Dwyer will come to me and say, God sent this to me. And I go, oh, right, thank you very much. And I write it down, and I go and think about it. Or he speaks to me through creation while I'm working in the garden. You know, those things have constantly been there. Difficult situations, like with Dad dying recently, as I've shared before, he was there in everything. I saw his provision for my dad. I saw, you know, from the local authority. I saw my dad have what I call a very peaceful, pain-free passing. You know, Mum had a dream a couple of nights before, so she knew that he was about to pop his clogs. And one of the things that I read years and years ago was from someone called Corrie Ten Boom, who wrote about the fact that she was very concerned about going to a concentration camp, and she said to her dad, how do I know God's going to be with me in this? And he said to her, when you're going on a train journey, when do I give you the ticket? She said, just before I get on the train. And he said, it's the same with God. God will give you what you need at that point in time you will need it. And that's what I've discovered. So in actual fact, when my dad died, I wasn't feeling sad. I actually felt really happy. Because he fought a good fight, he kept the faith, he'd gone home to glory, he was partying, and I was still here. One of my last question marks, one of my last things to him was, Dad, when you get into heaven, don't forget your promise to me that you give Jesus a hug. He smiled. Areas of struggle. One of the things I have to struggle with was being single. Now, I prayed about two things when I was young. The two things were my first job and who I'd marry. The job in the end worked itself out really well. It was the first school that I actually did my teaching practice on. They spotted me walking down the road one day and said, we've got a job going. Come on, come and join us. There it was. No interview, in. We go. When it came marriage, that was a bit different because I heard God speak to me audibly in a voice. I was in Cornwall on a cliff, sat in a stile, watching some friends of mine walking, and suddenly this voice said, "Your time will come." And I jumped up, looked around, and said, "Who said that?" And it was a cow in the field. I thought, well, okay, I've had this answer, but I don't know about my cow. But anyway, I thought, oh, maybe that was God. Shared it with various people, shared it with my church leaders. And funny thing was, the day we shared it with the church leaders, my cell group leader and I prayed and fasted on that day. The church leaders had actually had a day together. They'd been praying about the same group in the church, and they felt God clearly say that. 23 years later, you know, things begin to happen. There are a few hitches on the way. And one of the things I've learned is that God does work things out in our lives. I mean, I've never fasted as much as I did in those days. I had dreams, I had visions, I had words from people. Some of them were okay, some of them were a bit kooky. But he taught me something through it. And I think when he takes you through something that's very long, the first thing he teaches you is that he's God. You can't, you know, when you know God's going to do something for you, you can kind of tweak it. You can kind of make things happen. Well, the first thing he teaches you is that he's God. And I had to literally bow the knee and think and say to him, even though you said that I'm going to get married, if you choose to change your mind and I don't get married, then I'm happy to accept that. And the day I did that, I knelt on the ground. And so I'm not kidding. Something inside me went crack, but physical cracking inside. And from that day on, I couldn't care less. If I get married, I get married. If I don't, I don't. It's okay. And 2 years later, I was married. And the way in which God did that was miraculous. In fact, even to the point that when Pete asked me to marry him, I came back to Exeter where I was living, and the Royal Mail were doing huge billboards, and this huge billboard said, "Dear Pete, the answer is yes." But that was because I had a bargain with God. My thing with God was the same as with Abraham. Because my experience in marriage was the same as Abraham. You know, Abraham wanted a son, then God gave him a son, and then he had to sacrifice him. I had to get to the point where I put marriage on the altar because my love for God was greater. In that sense, if you get what I'm saying. My thing with God afterwards was, if, you know, when I get married, I want to be like Abraham's servant, because, you know, I like men, sorry.
It's all right.
I like women as well.
Just finish this story.
Yeah, and so it was a case of, you know, just as Abraham's servant said, whoever gives the camel something to drink, you know, that will be the person. I'll know that's the person you've got for Isaac. So with me, there was a key thing that happened that God, in the end, sort of provided me with a clear direction that was what was going to happen. So those are areas where I've had success, and you don't want me to talk about my struggles.
Well,
I can just give a quick list. You might kick me off the oversight after this. Right, prayer. We all struggle with that. I'm continuing. Seeing my pupils with the eyes of Jesus rather than wanting to clap around the ears. Letting go of situations so that my heart doesn't become hard when things happen. Losing control, areas of my life, like flying. I haven't been on a plane for a very long time. The challenge of aging, and Dave faces the same. and now, you know, our minds, how they work. And, you know, will we miss God's purpose for our life? You know, are we really achieving that? And recently, God's been pointing out certain things about attitudes. And I went forward for prayer last week with Andy, you know, talking about some of the things I'm struggling with and receiving prayer on that. So I found that prayer miracles have been part of my everyday life. And as I continue to try to walk with Jesus, I expect them to play an increasingly more important role.
Don't reach envelopes yet, Marion. That was great. I think people could have listened for another half hour, and perhaps we don't do it often enough to give people a chance to tell their stories about how. And just take an envelope. Don't open it yet, please. the but I want to go through this and put the thing together to do a bit more biblical analytical stuff now. Now, Andy was telling me that you guys in the group over there were trying to understand this idea of when we talk about the perfect ring, what do we mean by that? Now, I know I've talked about it half a dozen times since the beginning of the year, but I wanted to just do this again. What we're talking about is there's a yellow dimension, which we describe as being upwards to God, and that there's a blue dimension, and this is bound not to work. There's a blue dimension, and where they come together, we all know that in theory, it's almost impossible to do it actually, you end up with a green. And if you actually spend too much time, you just give yourself to people, 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 there's a sort of harshness that develops and meaninglessness that develops in that. And of course, if you spend your time just God, 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 and ignore people, then you're missing it too. Which is why we talk about this. And Jesus being in that position where he was the perfect green. Now, the reason I've mentioned this here is that I want to place what I'm saying in the context. That's a piece of technology that we have developed. The amazing thing is, or the strange thing is, that I found it on the website and I thought, that is real revelation. That's a prophetic word for me. Never been able to find the website again. It's not spooky, it's just that I think the guy didn't think it was very interesting, so must have taken it off his website. But I thought that was absolutely stunking. So, when you get the yellow and the blue together, when you get the Godwood together and the peoplewood together, when you love God and love your neighbour, then the perfect green is what it means to be really human. And the real, really human was Jesus. He was the one who was that. Now, so put that to one side for a moment. Now, lots of us have said at various times that church on Sundays is the shop window for whatever happens. And that's the thing we need to get right. Now, I want to say to you, that is, if you've ever been told that, that's a really bad heresy. Sundays is not the shop window. It should never be the shop window. We don't want Sundays to be the shop window. In fact, we're just a bit surprised that extra people have been coming along since we've been doing Sundays. And we're not sure how many people we want to come along because we've got problems with capacity here. So half the time I'm scared that the church is going to fail and no one will come. And half the time I'm scared that on Sundays too many people will come. And until we'll get ourselves sorted out for the next move. But hey, there you go. That's I'm never happy as far as that's concerned. So if Sundays isn't the shop window, what is? Okay, what's the shop window? What's the shop window for what God's doing in Basel? Here's the shop window. Yeah? That's the shop window. Right? Don't worry about what happens here on Sundays. Nobody's going to see that. That's what people are going to see. Everywhere they go. And I just want to spend a few minutes exposing this, enforcing it, and putting it to you in the context of the missional thing, so that when we get back to talking about discipleship again, and don't mention missional, you've got that playthrough in your head, that it really matters that I follow Jesus in every area of my life, because that's the shop window. That's where people are going to see God. That's where people are going to know that it's worthwhile. So, if people come along to Sundays because they're coming with you, what the process will have been that they'll have seen Karen and said, there is something about Karen's life that I want to connect with. What is this? And they may start off by saying, well, it's a nice person. You know, sort of, it's got nothing to do with her going to church or being involved in Day Spring or that sort of stuff. But gradually that will become clear that perhaps there is something. They've come along with her, perhaps to Essence, possibly to Cabaret Connections, possibly to when they get involved and say, well, I want to connect with this. And if they come along and it's a really lousy meeting, it doesn't matter. Because for months and years they've been seeing what's been going on in your life, in Karen's life, and they say, well, yeah, you know, obviously there's still something useful here. And it'll be better next week because instead of Paul leading the singing, Ralph will be leading the singing. Yeah? You know, it's not a it'll improve your singing if you wear an orange shirt, I think. Look at that. It could even be an Australian with a shirt like that. Do you know, we actually used to have, I was talking about designing covers. I should not be doing this, but I'll start it, I'll finish. We're talking about designing covers when we're in the Bible Society for any of our Bibles. And we had to consult the Australian Bible Society when we did it. And so we would write to them and say, here's the Bible. And you knew what the answer was going to be every time from Australia. It's not bright enough. And that was always the case. And because the sun shines so much more in these places, anything that looked fine to us and was really bright and really good. So we even had things called the Sunrise Bible, if you remember we did in 1976. Sent it to Australia and they said, the sun's not shining brightly enough. So that was the connection. It's got nothing to do with anything at all, apart from the fact that I've kind of lost my place. So, Sundays is not shopping, that one is. Who is? Paul says this in 1 Thessalonians chapter 1. He says, you became imitators of us and the Lord Jesus and of the Lord, for you welcomed the message in the midst of severe suffering with the joy given by the Holy Spirit, and so you became a model to all the believers in Macedonia and Achaia. In fact, in the message, it says, you are the message. You became the message. He goes on to say, the Lord's message rang out from you, and not only in Macedonia and Achaia, your faith in God has become known everywhere. So, let's have a look at this, but do it by, if you want more serious technology, you get more serious technology in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 17, where it says this, now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we all, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. So, what's the technology? Here's another dimension to it. Now, I wrote an email about this a couple of weeks ago, I don't know whether you remember, but was talking about this thing about revelation coming to people and about people seeing the glory of God. And it talked about the fact that for some reason people can't see it. So look, let's think about your world. Let's think about work and family. The problem is that here's the glory of God up here, yeah? Okay? And they're not seeing it. Why are they not seeing it? They're not seeing it because there's a cloud, there's a veil, there's something in the way. So, how do they see it? They see it like this. Okay? We become the reflection. Okay? The glory of God comes in, the light comes in, it bounces off us, and people see it. That, if you are understanding what I'm saying, is just about the scariest idea that you will ever cope with in your life. And I'm sure we will still be struggling with it. Why is it that people are not responding to God? Why is it that people can't see it? The only chance they've got to see it is you or me. Not on Sundays. So, if we just work this through for a moment, let's think of some people at work. What about your colleagues? Okay, workmates, that's easier. Mates. Okay. And then you've got bosses. Yeah? You've got people who work for you. You've got staff, perhaps. You've got customers. That's easy to treat customers nicely, but what about suppliers? Yeah, you deal with suppliers. Now, how do they find out what Jesus is like? It's easy. They get Jesus on the phone, right? Every time you speak to them. You've got students, you've got teachers, you've got all those sorts of people. You think about in your family situation, your neighbours. I don't know. Occasionally, very occasionally, we have, Wendy and I have strong disagreements. And it has been known that we've had a strong disagreement and then suddenly realised that the window was open. You ever had a strong disagreement? And I have to say that the first thing I think is, oh, what are people going to think about Jesus? Now that sounds pretty arrogant, doesn't it? But you know what I mean? We're the only chance they've got to find out what Jesus is like. And here we are, not calling one of the names, hopefully, not using bad language, but nonetheless illustrating that Wendy isn't quite the gracious person that she was. You've got neighbours. What about your relatives? Hey guys, this is the big one. The most important criterion to the development of your children as people of God is the reflection that you give them of Jesus. Okay? That is the big deal. When children look at you, they see Jesus, and in copying you, they begin to absorb things in their spiritual life. So you take Bethany, as she gets older, the impression that she will get about Jesus will be almost entirely over these next few years out of what happens to her mum and dad. That's tough. Quote the exceptions, fine. I understand the exceptions. But the argument that we're going through at the moment, the point that we're wanting to make is this, that we're the ones who develop, who give that impression. And guys, I think this applies to husbands and wives as well. But we haven't mentioned children, but even more importantly, the person, your spouse, is the person above all else that you manifest Christ to. Right? That's really where it works. That's the most important relationship and the most important place to be manifesting Jesus. Okay? That doesn't mean that you excuse everything, but it does mean that you don't collude with one another. You know? Most husbands don't point out areas where their wives can develop spiritually because they know what will happen if they do, and their wives will turn around and say, well, you're not so spiritual yourself. We know that's true. But this whole thing about reflection, I came across these and thought these were real fun. Is this, look, that's you. Yeah? Okay. That's all you are. A whole reflection. That's you at your best. And the problem is, of course, the issue of distortion because of contamination. There are bits in our life that don't work so well a lot of the time. And we haven't got much time, didn't expect to have much time at the end of this session, which I do really. But I'd like you just to open your envelope for a moment. Did everybody get one? Okay, there's something in your envelope that I'd really like you to keep with you over the next while. Put it where you keep your change, put it in your purse. And you'll find, if you get the right surface, you can actually peel off, you know, the thing that stops the reflection. Yeah? You got yours, Mary?
Yeah.
There it is. That's how people are going to find out Jesus. That's where the shop window is. Stick it in your pocket and sleep. You can actually glue it to a mirror or glue it somewhere if you need to. That's why it matters whether or not we're following Jesus in every aspect of our lives. Yeah? Because if we become people who not only hear the word, but do it, then we become a reflection. So, Where are you going to be on Monday morning? You're going to be distorting, you're going to be reflecting. Yeah? People are going to see Jesus. People are going to miss out. Okay, guys? That's the response maker this week. Take it with you. I don't know whether on the 26th we get a chance to take the process on a bit further, because Andy's going to be doing his stuff, and I'd like to talk about signs and wonders in evangelism in the following week. If we get a chance to do that, we will. You know that for 5 weeks after that, in August, we're going to be doing something slightly more downbeat. I think we've called it Start With God, haven't we? Because what we're going to do is we're going to do five things from the Bible, which will be a whole family thing. Okay, you'll see if you look on the page on the website. And what we want to do is to take those stories and actually look at where they start with God. So we're just encouraging ourselves throughout the summer. We've said that we're going to try and do brunches then, but they'll be very simple brunches, you know, sort of nothing terribly glorious, very awful. We'll work our way through to that. And then in September, we're going to be pushing on in to what God has got for us. And the rest of it we can talk to you about at the update. So don't forget, we've got three updates in the week after next. On the Wednesday and Thursday, they're going to be in the evenings, and we're going to see if we can fire here to have them in rather than have them in my house. And on the Thursday morning, we're planning to have an update for the people who are mainly in the daytime group. And we've heard, one or two people have heard that we're serving breakfast that morning and have changed their mind and decided they want to come to that one rather than the evening one. So if you're in that position, we want to be along there then. That's fine. Andy, you need to be available if you can then to fry the eggs, because otherwise I don't get eggs. Do you remember we did it? Yeah. Good. We can't do turkeys. Do you know, in all the conversations about the Lord and about good things yesterday morning, Philippa went into a long explanation with somebody about how bad her husband was if it was cooking turkey. But there you go. If you want to find out how all that fitted in, there's another story there. Hey guys, reflection or distortion? That's where people are going to see Jesus. That's where it comes together in us. That's what the yellow and the green are about. 2 Corinthians 3, 1 Thessalonians 1, we're trying to put the Bible passages up on the website. And we've got a few other links there, including some stuff about that guy, Abraham the Kuiper, which probably nobody will read, but I will feel better if I put it up about it anyway. Okay, that's it for this one.